Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, we're going to travel to the National Capital Region, which is also called the DMV. Not the Department of Motor Vehicles, but the District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia. Today, we have our guest, Jim Hansen. He is from Chevy Chase, Maryland, and we will talk to him and pick his brain about that area. So I'll tell you a little bit about Jim. Jim was born in Pensacola, Florida in 1965 and raised in a military family. By the time he graduated from high school in 1983 in Newport News, Virginia, he had attended 9 different elementary and secondary schools. He can legitimately say that he has lived in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Washington, D.C., New York, Germany, and now Maryland. Oh my God, I'm tired already. Until he moved to the Washington metro area in 1989, he has never lived in one town or city for more than 3 years. Oh my God, I think you beat the record for me too. Travel and anything international has always been a significant part of his life. He grew up with a German grandmother who taught high school social studies when she wasn't traveling the world. His grandfather was in the American military and stationed in Turkey in the 1950s and Iran in the 1960s. That fueled his grandmother's love of the far and near East, and that was transmitted to him via the slides she would show him when he stayed at her house and all the Asian artifacts that filled her home. She literally traveled the entire Silk Road except Afghanistan. By the time he graduated college, he had already been to Europe and Asia. His career choices seemed to boil down to either international relations or the hospitality industry or the mix of the two. Luck and chance led him to a career in the federal government where he's been for 33 years. Approximately 23 of those years have been spent doing international work. The remainder has been in high-level management positions. His work has allowed him to travel to Europe, South America, and Asia multiple times. Between work and his own passion for travel, he's a member of the Six Continents Club, with only Antarctica being the one that got away. His passion for travel continuing in retirement. He's a big believer of life lists, not bucket lists. He's been very lucky in that he's hit so many places, but there is still so much more to see. Right now, that includes New Zealand, India, South Africa, Costa Rica, Poland, and all the countries of the former Yugoslavia. He's very fortunate, has a partner of 29 years who also loves to travel. Ultimately, it's a compromise. They trade off picking places to visit. Next stop, probably Greece, because his other half hasn't been, but Jim has been twice. His next stop, either India or New Zealand. Welcome, Jim, to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming and spending time. And tell us a little bit about why you chose Chevy Chase, how you wound up there, and give us a little story about that area.
Sure. Thank you, Mark. We're actually still unpacking here in Chevy Chase, having moved about 5 miles from our home in the District of Columbia. It was a very large house, and we decided really that we needed to downsize, particularly given my office was up on the fourth floor and the main living area is the first floor. Insofar as trying to figure out where to retire, we did a lot of research, and we had originally anticipated splitting our time between Massachusetts, where my partner is originally from, We've got a condo in Quincy and a house in Falmouth, Massachusetts, and a house in St. Petersburg. And I'll make this brief. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole. But we purchased a house in St. Pete, Florida. And you mentioned I was born in Pensacola, and my family, my grandparents lived, a different set of grandparents lived in Tampa when I was growing up. So I was very familiar with the area. We went to Florida. We looked at Orlando, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Sarasota, and Tampa, St. Pete. And ultimately, after multiple trips down there, we decided to try Tampa, St. Pete, bought a house on the water in St. Petersburg in 2018. Great house. We've never actually lived in it. We rented it out as soon as we purchased it because neither one of us was ready to retire. We would go and stay in Airbnbs in the interim, even during COVID, to sort of ease into the notion of retirement. But Florida's gotten a little bit too crazy for us. So we are throwing our house on the market as soon as the lease is up with our current tenants. And that's one of the reasons why, after a lot of soul searching this past April, when we were down in St. Pete in an Airbnb, we realized we need to stay in the DMV. And so that's how we wound up in Chevy Chase. We had a short list of requirements we wanted out of a condo: fireplace, laundry, balcony being three really important ones, plus indoor parking spaces, because although it doesn't snow that much here, we're just not up for shoveling out cars anymore. We've had a couple of major snowstorms here, Snowmageddon being one of the more famous ones. So that's the longer story of how we wound up in Chevy Chase. But honestly, once we really got into it, I can remember we would go out for brunch on Sunday mornings in Bethesda, which is a stone's throw from where I'm currently sitting. It's technically a different city or town, if you will. And I would look around and say, geez, you know, if I can afford a condo here, this wouldn't be a bad place to retire because it kind of ticked all of the boxes. Well, I'm 1.7 miles from Bethesda at the moment. And they're putting in a metro, which, if you're not from D.C., that's our version of the subway. Mm-hmm. They're still building it out here. And I'm going to be a five-minute walk from a, I guess it would be a streetcar-style subway station. And I can take that right straight into Bethesda. So I won't need to even get in my car. But that's unfortunately about 2 years away.
Would you be able to go into D.C. itself?
I could. It would be a little bit longer ride, though. One of the things about D.C., it's a very large area, and we don't, unlike New York City, which has this very robust interconnectivity in their subway system, or, you know, Paris is infamous for being so well connected, or Berlin. Our subway, while decent, isn't that well connected. Sometimes you wind up spending quite a bit of time riding on it just to get to a different station to switch and then go to another station or line. So it, gotcha. It can be, yeah, I was 7.5 miles away from my office downtown on the mall before we moved. And if I took mass transit, that would take me 90 minutes. If I go by car, depending upon the time of day, that was 20 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. It's metro works, but there are hassles.
Not so much.
Yeah. It's a connectivity issue. They didn't build it out enough, but it's very well used. So I think it's the second busiest subway system in the United States.
Gotcha. So I'm intrigued about this whole area because District of Columbia in itself is a large area, Maryland and Virginia. That whole area, there's all different cities that you can choose from to live, and they're all basically right around one another, if I'm not mistaken.
They abut each other. I know you're familiar with the New York City metropolitan region, and it's called the tri-state area up there. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people that live in New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut. In DC, we just happen to have a city that grew from being a relatively small city into a large metro area. We're actually now the sixth largest metro area in the United States, and a lot of people don't realize that. We're actually larger than Boston. And the thing is that there's a river dividing Washington, D.C. proper from Virginia, and there's really nothing but a dotted line on a map dividing Maryland from the district. And so on any given Saturday, if I'm just doing basic errands, I can go from D.C. to Virginia, back to D.C. to Maryland, and not even know it. If you were a passenger in my car, you wouldn't even be able to tell where you were. And there are a lot of people that just do that. It's a result of D.C. proper being a rather small land area, and it's only about 700,000 people, and that's gone up considerably since I moved here 30 years ago. But as a result of the subways and the expanding population and the business presence here, the city just kept growing and growing, and we continue to grow. And so it has encompassed this entire national capital region. And we, although there's the District of Columbia in two states, we actually have more in common with each other than, for example, the county of Arlington would have with something out in Southwest Virginia, like Rappahannock County. The district proper has a certain flavor and character as a result of being so close and having people that do go from Virginia, for example, into Washington, D.C. for dinner or to a show or to go see something on the mall and vice versa. People will leave the district to go to a park nearby in Virginia or in Maryland. And so we collectively have more in common with each other than we necessarily have with the outer portions of the state. I did live in the Virginia part of the DC area for a while. And I have also lived in Lexington, Virginia, Newport News, Virginia. And I will tell you that the Virginia nearby, Arlington County and the city of Alexandria, have a lot more in common with their Maryland counterparts in DC than they do with anything out towards the Blue Ridge Mountains or even down in the Tidewater area. So we're sort of a collective personality, if you will. There are differences, obviously. You have different states involved, different political climates. Maryland is blue. Virginia, once you get away from D.C., is red, red to purple, sort of. And D.C. has always been Democratic. But there are flavor differences. But I could blindfold you and then drop you off in Old Town Alexandria, blindfold you again, bring you into Capitol Hill or Georgetown, and then blindfold you again and bring you someplace in Maryland, and you would think that you were still in Georgetown, that you'd never left Georgetown. It looks a lot alike in some places.
Yeah. I remember even visiting DC. I went to Georgetown. I think I took a ferry or a boat ride.
Water taxi.
Yeah. Water Possibly. Taxi, something into Georgetown. And yeah, it was, everything is so close. What made you decide on Chevy Chase?
We looked at Virginia, we looked at DC, we looked at Maryland. And ultimately, with our list of what we wanted, it was the right unit at the right price. We wanted to stay close to where we lived, and there was another area that was actually closer. It was a mile from our house. But unfortunately, although it ticked most of our boxes, it would have probably been about $150,000, $200,000 more for a comparable condo. So we sacrificed location for price. It's a great building, just not a little bit further away from what would have been our ideal location.
Are you in a condo?
Or? Yeah, 3-bed, 2-bath with a fireplace, in-unit nice. Washer, dryer, and a balcony.
Nice. Yeah. Yep. Condo's the way to go for me because that's where I live, in the middle of Phoenix. So yeah, I prefer me just paying HOA fees and maintenance fees and let them do the work. So
I'm in the same place. Yeah. I physically can't do the shoveling anymore, as I mentioned. And it's nice not to have a yard service to do the yards and stuff like that. It's a lot lower level of maintenance.
Yes. So talking about climate, tell us about the climate for the people that are not familiar with the area. It's basically a little bit warmer than New York City.
I would argue quite a bit.
Yeah.
We do have large snowstorms, although knock on wood, we've not had one in quite some time. Quite some time meaning we really haven't had any noticeable snow in the past 3 years. Hmm. We have had some very severe snowstorms during my tenure here. I mentioned Snowmageddon. We had another 2 winters where I think pretty much closed down the government, which they do here. We closed down the government for a week at a time. And one of the reasons for that is, number one, the metro system runs partially above ground. And if it gets above a certain level, the trains can't operate. The exterior trains can't. The other thing is we don't invest in snowplows like a lot of other jurisdictions do. And as a result, the roads wind up being impassable for a week or more. I'm originally from upstate New York, and in Albany, New York, where I went to school, it used to be, oh, it's snowing, let's give the snowplows an hour to take care of stuff, and then we can go out and drive.
Right.
That's not DC. We generally, I have become immune to the swamp-like weather we have in the summer sometimes. It really does not bother me. Spring and fall can be quite nice. It's nice outside. It's cooled down to around 70 degrees. Don't have much humidity at the moment. We typically don't see much in the way of snow until January. Once in a blue moon, we might have a little white Christmas. January, February, March is when we get our snow. And there again, too, with the exception of those, I don't want to call it freak because it's happened several times since I've lived here. But for the most part, you know, you'll get maybe an inch or two these days, and it's perfectly survivable. It's much, much lighter than New York was.
Yeah.
Our weather's better than Philly, too.
I mean, I'm sure even New York, since left in 2014, I'm sure it's got a little bit warmer due to climate change. But I remember growing up in New York, and I'm sure you can relate to upstate New York. We had some bad winters. I mean, cold, snowy winters. And even when I left in 2014, I mean, we've had our share of snow, but I can't remember it. Maybe when I was a kid, I just felt like, wow, my God, it's a lot of snow out here. And even in the 70s or 80s, I remember snowstorms. But as time went on, it seemed to get warmer and the snow really didn't happen as much as it did before. So,
I mentioned I went to school in SUNY Albany. I can remember my senior year pulling into the parking lot because I lived off campus. This was probably in February. And the radio announcer came on. I was listening to the radio announcer came on and he said, listen to this. It's 9 a.m. and it is 9 below 0. It was at that point that I said, I need to get out of here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I can totally relate. My husband comes from upstate New York in the Watertown, New York area, where it really gets clobbered with snow, like over 100 inches per year. Yeah. So, yeah.
Upstate, they have a saying, Buffalo gets the snow, Albany gets the cold, and Syracuse has the worst of both worlds.
Yep. Yeah, we have relatives in Syracuse as well. So, but yeah, not for me. I'd rather be, I'm here in the warm weather and hot weather in the summer. But okay. So tell us about the area in general as far as the LGBTQ community. I know Washington, D.C. has a large LGBTQ community. Tell us about the other outlying areas such as Maryland and Virginia as well.
First, just a tiny bit of history. Washington, D.C., although it hasn't always been this widely known, has always had a very large gay community. It always has for decades and decades. And there's actually a book out. I haven't read it yet, but I do have it. It's called The Secret City. So gays have long flocked to government and tried to have a role in that. So there's a very deep history. Previously, it used to be that DuPont Circle by Connecticut Avenue was the quote-unquote gayborhood. If you wanted to find gay people, that's where you would go. That's where you would live. That's where you would find the bars. That's where you would go out for dinner. You would find the gay book stores. In my time here, the city has truly transformed. The city started gentrifying. And so from Connecticut Avenue, it started gentrifying east. And as the various and sundry streets got absorbed into the gayborhood, it greatly expanded. But then something interesting happened. As a part of just the overall expansion of the DC population, we started having sort of break off areas of where the gays would live. So now I would say DuPont Circle, why there still is a very strong gay presence, isn't necessary. We don't necessarily have something that I would target as saying, okay, this is the gayborhood anymore. Arlington County is known as being extremely gay friendly. There are a lot of gays that live there, and it's often referred to as DuPont Circle West. And so you have that. You have Capitol Hill, which has a huge gay presence. And also, for example, even up in Bethesda, there's a very large gay presence as well. So the gay environment has really spread across the entire DMV. And I would say as long as you're within the beltway, per se, and I know that Atlanta has the Perimeter Road, which is something similar. We have a road 495 that encircles the city. As long as you're within the beltway, being gay is pretty much a non-issue. You generally don't have anybody look at you twice. It is perfectly natural to go into a restaurant, be it in Bethesda or downtown DC, or to stay in hotels. It's just, at least in terms of, from what I can tell, being a member of the LGBTQ community in DC is a non-issue. And it has really turned into that. And that's one of the things that, you know, I have the luxury of living in a city that I don't have to worry about that kind of a thing. And that truly is a luxury.
That's very important, Jim.
It is. And you hear about San Francisco being gay in New York City. I would argue DC might have the third largest gay population per capita in the United States. I would almost argue that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very important to feel comfortable where you live and how you get treated, and you don't get those stares or anything else. And you can hold your partner's hand or your husband's hand down the street and not think twice. So that's what I look for in some place to live. So very good. I'm glad that whole we spread the gay in that whole Beltway area.
Yeah, it is definitely, you know, if people realize that they can live more cheaply than downtown DC, and that's why they moved out to Virginia and to Maryland.
So are there any gay bars, so to speak, in those outlying areas as well, like Chevy Chase or any parts of that area, the DMV area, besides DC and DuPont?
I'm going to be one of those really boring middle-aged gays and say that I haven't been to a gay bar literally in 15 years. But I will tell you that I'm aware that there is a gay bar it's called Crystal City. It's technically Arlington County. There used to be two in Virginia that I was aware of. There was one, I think it was called 808 King Street. That has since closed, though. And the other place might still be there on 23rd Street in Crystal City. But it's also my understanding in talking with some of the younger generation that gays aren't necessarily going to gay bars anymore. Instead, they are going out with their mixed friend groups to gay-friendly places, as opposed to, you know, strictly having a gay place to go out. And that's been a real change insofar as a generational change.
Why do you think that is?
Well,
the apps?
Yes, that's exactly it. I think that one of the primary driving factors for having gay bars has been subsumed by the apps, number one. And number two, I think acceptance. You know, there are LGBTQ people with friends on the spectrum, be they straight or however they identify. And as a result, they want to go out with a group of people and not just in one type of environment. And I'd say that most of the large gay bars that I'm aware of have shut down here. I mean, Badlands used to be a huge disco in the DuPont Circle area. That's gone. I would be very hard pressed to come up with the name of a large, exclusively gay dance bar in the DC metro area. But you can go out to different places and see what you can walk into a restaurant and see. I just did this recently, a restaurant, one of my favorite places just down the street. We were sitting there and there was a group of, I think, 10 gay men at a table having a dinner as part of a friend group. And that is just perfectly natural. No one even bats an eyelash.
See, I think it's great because of the area that you're in. I still think there's a need for gay bars, depending upon where you live. So to me, when I lived in Florida, I would welcome having a gay bar, because are you that welcome and safe in other places? Not so much. You know, I feel like there's more community in a gay bar in a place that I don't feel as comfortable. Whereas if I was in a place that I totally felt comfortable, yeah, then it could be integrated.
I mentioned I went to school in Lexington, Virginia for 3 years. The closest gay bar was in Roanoke. That would be an example. You wouldn't feel comfortable outside of the atmosphere of that gay bar. And I believe it's still there. It may have a different name, but that is an excellent example of where a gay bar is needed, because I don't care what kind of apps you have. The gay community is not going to feel comfortable at an average Roanoke, Virginia bar.
Right. Yeah. And I've spoken to people in various places around the country as well, like Santa Fe. Santa Fe doesn't have gay bars because, you know what? People don't care. They're all welcome. You know, everybody's welcome. And it's quite a diverse community. So there is no need for it. do I still feel like if I'm a tourist, I don't know what my surroundings really are. So do I look for gay bars? Yes, I do, because it's just, I don't know how the atmosphere is. But anyway, you understand, you know, where I'm coming from.
Completely.
In that respect. Okay. How about meeting friends in the gay community? Are there any groups, or is it easy to meet friends, difficult? Tell us a little bit about your experiences.
DC has changed a bit in the 30 years that I've been here, not just from a gay straight perspective. It's a little bit easier to make friends. There used to be a saying, if you want a friend in Washington, D.C., buy a dog. Honestly, that is the saying here. The other thing that is true, and I'm afraid it's still somewhat true, outside of Washington, D.C., it's considered to be rude if the first words out of your mouth when you meet somebody new is, what do you do? That is usually, outside of D.C., considered rude. In D.C., that's what you immediately say right after hello, how are you? That is in part so that they can kind of determine where you are in the socioeconomic political spectrum. It's gotten better. It's not quite that bad. And that is particularly true because back in the day, DC was a one-horse town. It was all about government. You were either in government or on the Hill, or you were in some capacity lobbying or supporting that. That has completely changed. We now have major corporations. You know, Marriott's based here. I believe Boeing is now based here. Just a number of corporations that previously didn't have headquarters here. So this is no longer a government town. Yeah, there are interest groups, be they gay or straight, for just about any interest that you could possibly have. There's a group called Front Runners, if you enjoy running, but you don't want to run alone. They have different gay sports leagues. So there's probably a different type of group for whatever your interests are here. It can still be a little challenging to make friends here, particularly if you're just moving to town and you're on the older end of the spectrum. But you're eventually going to find your people one way or another. But you definitely need to make an attempt to go meet people. In the brief time that I have spent down in St. Petersburg, I will tell you that it is an extremely friendly area. And I would think that it's probably easier to make friends down there than it is here in D.C. But, you know, it's a place that you do sincerely need to try. It's not a place that's going to come knocking down your door with a welcome wagon. And get involved. Go through the whole list of groups. Get involved.
And so interesting what you said, that in D.C. they say, oh, what do you do? And it's just like that in New York. And unfortunately, we're in such a society, economic, and, you know, everything is built on money in our society here in the U.S. That is the most important thing to people's conversations. And you go to a place like Europe, and they don't even bring that up. They couldn't care less what you do, you know, as far as what your job is. They want to know you as a person. And I kind of wish that was like a little bit like that here. Everything is like based upon the old U.S. dollar and the greenback.
It's actually considered rude in Europe if you ask what someone does.
Right, right.
And the other thing is, if you're retired and you move to D.C., how do you answer that question? What do you do?
What do you do? I'm retired. Right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. See ya. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm long for Europe and the European lifestyle. But once I retire, I'll be able to at least visit and enjoy it. But anyway, tell us a little bit about the local economy. I know, would it differ from state to state, like within the DMV, or is it pretty much similar as far as how much it costs to buy a home, a condo? Give us an example of prices for, let's say, even in Chevy Chase, 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo.
DC is going to be the single most expensive area, period. If you want to live within walking distance of a metro stop, even more so. I would say for a nice 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo in Washington, D.C., in a nice building within relatively easy walking distance of a metro, you're going to have to start at $550. Hmm. Now, if you leave D.C. or if you go to one of the gentrifying areas of D.C., you certainly can find things that are cheaper. if someone really wants to move to the National Capital Region, I would recommend it, particularly if they're looking for something more reasonably priced. Take out a map of the metro system, just because you'll probably, as we progress in retirement, you will probably want to ride the metro versus necessarily driving someplace. Mm-hmm. And look at some of the stops that are a little bit further out, places like Reston, where, okay, it's not quite as, I don't want to say it's not gay unfriendly. You're just not going to find as many gay people out in some of the farther reaches, but you will be able to find condos that are a little bit more affordable if you tend to look at some of those areas. Or, you know, there are, for example, Tacoma Park in the Maryland side is sort of this little enclave of, we jokingly call it sort of Hippieville or Crunchy Granola, but that tends to be cheaper. So you really sort of have to have in mind, if you're moving to Washington, an idea of what your price point is, and then be realistic. Don't force your realtor to march through the district proper and insist that you are going to find a condo, damn it, for, you know, $200,000 and it has two beds and two baths. That ain't happening. So I would say definitely know what your financial target is, and then be willing to look outside of the immediate downtown area. You know, look at some of the other smaller communities like Delray in Virginia, which is near Alexandria, or I mentioned Tacoma Park. There are areas that are North Bethesda, not necessarily Bethesda proper. So there are areas that you can buy a condo, save money, and feel safe. But by and large, the district is, the DMV area is quite expensive for housing. When we were looking, we saw units that were three bedrooms, two and a half baths that were a million. So that's, you know, we're not New York City, but we're not far off the mark.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of go in with this attitude of, or I'll give you an excellent example. Somebody who wants to move to DC and you go, okay, and sorry, I use DC to refer to the whole area. If you want to move to DC and they say, well, gee, I'd really love to live in Bethesda, but I can't afford anything in Bethesda. Well, a stone's throw from where I'm sitting is Silver Spring. Silver Spring probably can be 30% less than where I'm sitting. It doesn't quite have the Tony reputation of Bethesda, but I'm over there quite frequently. It's perfectly safe. It has some very nice theaters. The AFI, American Film Institute Theater, that shows old movies is over there. Very nice units. Some of them in, they do have some of the older buildings that are very well kept up that I would not hesitate to live in. But there are definitely options. You just have to sort of understand where to look and have a realtor that can show you those things.
And then you have to make a choice. Like, here's a big thing wherever you live is, okay, affordability is, to me, that's, of course, one of the most important things. And then you have to say to yourself, okay, what am I going to do? Or what am I going to do in retirement? Do I want to be submerged in the gay community, or do I want to be on the outskirts? So that's important too, because you have to think about the commuting time. So let's say you're going to want to do a lot of stuff in the gay community and be a part of that, and theater and city life and stuff like that. You have to think, well, maybe I should be more towards, you know, the District of Columbia, DC area, as opposed to one of the outer suburbs, because it's going to take so much time to commute. That's what happened to me when I lived in Florida. I lived in a suburb of Tampa, and quite frankly, it was beautiful. I mean, gorgeous, brand new, master planned community, but I was in the wrong place. So I was amongst straight couples with young kids that were growing up, and no real gay community within that community. So the friends that we knew and met lived in St. Pete. So we would have to commute 50 minutes to St. Pete every weekend to have dinner, drinks, whatever. And it got tiring. So that's a big decision to make as well when retiring too. Do I want to be close to everything? Do I want to be a little further away? And do I not care about being in the gay community?
Agreed. I have a friend who actually lives in a townhouse in Falls Church, which is, again, one of these little pocket cities that we have in the immediate DMV area. And until just recently, unfortunately, his roommate died. but he essentially was, he owns the townhouse and he was renting a room out in his townhouse, which had four bedrooms and two and a half baths, to a friend that he had known for 25 years. And so there are people that are doing that kind of a situation. And if you've got someone who has a very generously sized townhouse, there's no reason why, if you get along as roommates, that you can't somehow find that type of arrangement.
Right.
You know, that's very possible in retirement. And I also agree it's important to be close to the places where you're going to have social interactions. We have so many theaters here, so many other cultural opportunities. Kennedy Center regularly has free concerts. So you have to sort of visualize what are you doing in retirement and how close do you need to be?
Right, exactly. Tell us a little bit about renting versus owning. If you know anything, how, you know, how expensive are electric bills, water bills, gases? What do the taxes look like?
DC is widely considered to have the highest taxes in the DMV area. There are people that will argue that's not true. In Virginia, you do have, at least in Fairfax County, the personal property tax where they tax your vehicles. So that's something that you have to look at. If you live in DC proper, you don't necessarily need a car if you buy and or rent a well-located apartment slash condo. The taxes here, I would say, are, you know, my taxes are going to change as a result of moving from DC to Maryland. I understand that my taxes are going to go down from my CPA. It's not like Florida. We have income tax regardless of where you live in the DMV area. And we do have sales tax depending. So again, this isn't going to be the lowest cost place to live, but certainly, you know, I mentioned Silver Spring. They have rental buildings that are the older style rental buildings, you know, for example, four stories in brick, very well maintained. I wouldn't hesitate to move into these places. That's how well maintained they are. That are going to be cheaper than some of the much, much higher end places. You know, for example, when we were shopping, we found it shopping for a condo. We honestly found the buildings that were built in the 1980s to be a better buy than some of these newer places that we looked at. We were going into new units, and I don't know how familiar some of the listeners are with square footage in condos, but we were looking at three bedrooms they crammed into 1,000 square feet. I got news for you.
They do that.
That's not three bedrooms. That's two plus a walk-in.
Right.
You know, and these places were $750,000. There was no way. So you just have to sort of gauge. If you have to have all the bling, you have to have all the amenities, you have to have new, you're going to pay for it. If you're willing to stay, you know, to live in an older building, and we were looking at condos in a few older buildings that were much more reasonably priced. Some were like $400,000+, which I know for a number of people can still be expensive, but it was significantly less than some of the other places.
Now that you say that, newer buildings, yeah, they might look flashy on the outside and have all these nice, beautiful amenities. But also, what are they made out of? So are they made out of plywood? Because I'll tell you, my condo is made out of, we have concrete walls. And that is a major factor when it comes to noise. Because we have, we probably have 10 people on a floor, and we have seven floors as well. So
we have seven floors here.
It makes a difference.
Yeah, our building is brick on the outside, concrete on the inside.
Yep.
And so it's like a tomb from a noise perspective. Any noise that we hear comes through the windows, but not through the walls.
Yeah. And it's important that there's some apartments that I've rented that, oh my God, you could hear the next door neighbor go to the bathroom. You could hear upstairs. You could hear everything. Them walking on their, it sounds like they're walking on your head. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
that's another thing to look out for. Very good. So tell us about, as far as taxes go in that area, I don't know if you're familiar with all of the states, but generally speaking, do you know if 401ks, IRAs, and pensions and Social Security, are they all taxed?
I believe so, but don't trust me.
Okay.
I am now just truly being, I've gotten to the point where I'm exploring all of financial aspects. I went through one retirement seminar, but I really haven't sat down with my CPA and really sorted through everything to take a look. That now that we've moved into the condo, once we get everything put away, my next step is to sit down and say, okay, what is life looking like post-retirement? I had originally thought I would be retired already. Long story short, I am now at the age of 58 thinking that I'd like to continue working until I'm 62, if that's possible, from as much from a health perspective as anything else. Mm-hmm. And so it's between now and the age of 62 that I plan to really roll up my sleeves, sharpen my pencil and say, okay, what does life in retirement look like? Plus, yeah, our house that we just moved out of is on the market and we're trying to sell it. So we're not sure yet how all of that is going to play out.
Yeah, and fit. Well, you have some time. That's pretty good. Yeah, it's an important thing to look at also as you're coming closer and closer to retirement. When you want to retire right now, well, I'm looking into the near future, let's say, because I have reached that age. Pretty soon next year, I will be at my full Social Security age. So at that time, I'm thinking that could be a good time to just, you know, say goodbye to my full-time job, and I still have the podcast, and I can concentrate more on doing, you know, the podcast, although it creates no income. But yeah, it's something to look forward to. I'd like to do traveling and start living life. And again, those quote-unquote lists that I don't like to call bucket lists, but they are
a life list.
Life list that I want to experience before it's too late. So,
yeah, I definitely have my life lists. And, you know, for me, it's important that I do that while I'm still in good enough health to be able to go and visit. You know, I use India as an example in my bio, which is not the easiest destination to go travel through. Yeah. New Zealand is a difficult destination, but for other reasons, particularly the physical exertion of hiking every mountain kind of a thing.
Yeah. I enjoy hiking and, you know, in the Phoenix area.
I'm a minor hiker, but still it's a lot of walking.
But I'm a minor. Yeah, right. Yeah, not that much. Okay. So how about arts and culture in the region?
If you're bored in D.C., if you get bored in Washington, D.C., that's bad on you. That's all I have to say because, okay, we don't necessarily have the number one and number two theater scene in the United States, but I would argue maybe number three. In total, we have Ford's Theater, Arena Stage, Studio Shakespeare, the only theater, the Roundhouse, which is 5 minutes by car from my place, Signature Theater, which is known as the premier interpreter of Stephen Sondheim's works, due to their artistic director there. We have Woolly Mammoth, which does experimental, and we have the Keegan Theater. That didn't even touch on the Kennedy Center, which has three giant theaters there that include the symphony, the ballet, and all sorts of other Broadway shows that come in. So again, our performing arts scene is probably second only to New York City, and where Chicago's got a great scene as well. So we have everything that you could want in terms of theater. We have a lot of amateur theater that I didn't even touch on. Our museums, everyone has heard of the Smithsonian, so I'm not really going to waste time on that. We've got some incredible other ones. We have the Phillips Collection, which has world-renowned pieces of art. We've got the Hillwood Mansion, which is the former home of Marjorie Meriwether Post and has the best collection of Fabergé eggs outside of Russia. We have the Renwick Gallery. We have the Keegan. We have the National Museum of Women and the Arts. We have the Museum of Illusions. If you're into kitsch, we've got the Spy Museum, the National Building Museum. We have the Holocaust Museum, the DEA Museum. So again, enough to keep a resident busy between the circulating exhibits.
Yeah.
4 days and days and days.
Yeah, I could spend just a week going to museums.
Correct.
In D.C. So
yeah, so, and, you know, the National Symphony Orchestra is usually listed as a top 12, if not top 10, symphony orchestra in the United States, if you're into classical music. The operas, I've been to the opera, that's not bad. I confess I've not been to the ballet. So if you're into the arts, there's everything that you could ever want here, number one. Number two, There's also a lot for amateurs. If you want to start getting into painting, I know people that teach painting classes. There are people that are willing to, you know, teach you musical instruments if that's something that you want to pursue in retirement, or voice lessons. Pretty much, it really runs the gambit. There's something for everyone when it comes to the arts, entertainment, and culture. It's all here. And we have the Smithsonian Folklife Festival every summer, where they have different people from different areas of the world that come in and demonstrate their folk traditions, be it dancing and cooking and arts and crafts and stuff like that. So just about anything that you could think of is here. You know, yeah. If you're a sports fan, we have basketball, men's and women's. We've got soccer. We've got football. You know, we've got hockey. We have all sorts of amateur leagues, if that is your thing, if you want to go and play on the amateur leagues. And for parks and recreation, we have Rock Creek Park. We've got the towpath that used to be used in Georgetown that people jog on. We've got, you know, just all sorts of parks and opportunities here if you want to go paddle boating, canoeing. One of my neighbors, when I used to live towards Georgetown, did kayaking. And we actually have a kayaking course. I've never tried it. I've seen it, and I'm not about to try it. Where they actually, you have Olympians doing kayaking that practice there as a result of the quality of the course. Again, I'm not doing it. But, you know, you got fencing clubs. Just in Bethesda, they've got a fencing studio. So it's one of these things of, you name it, belly dancing. Sorry, my gym has belly dancing. Yeah, my gym has belly dancing lessons. And no, I'm not doing it. No. No, it's so from that perspective.
I'd like to see men's belly dancing.
I think they do a Hawaiian version. You may want to check on that. So from that perspective, we've got you covered. If you want to move to Washington, we have just about any type of cultural activity that you could possibly think of.
Yeah, I know. And my husband he's a retired social studies teacher from New York area. So he used to bring his kids to Washington on trips once a year. Mm-hmm. And they used to see everything, you know, as far as the museums were concerned. And I've gone on a couple of trips with my husband to Washington too, enjoyed it immensely. Just, you know, just seeing everything, the museums. We didn't even get to go to the gay bars. We were so busy doing everything else. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, and something that we didn't touch on, you know, for example, when my partner and I were looking for some place to retire to, having international air connections were very important to us. And Tampa does have some international air connections through British Airways, among others. But here in the DMV area, we have two airports, Dulles National, in our immediate vicinity. BWI in Baltimore is a little bit further away. But we have 61 international nonstop destinations just from Dulles Airport alone. So you can pretty much fly without too much trouble anywhere in the country. And that
very
was another
important
thing that we were looking for, is how easy is it to get from point A to point B?
Very important. That's one of my little checklists in finding a place. Where's the airport? How close is it to my home? And where does it go? Mm-hmm. Where do I have to transfer to go somewhere? So that's really important to me too, as well. So, okay. Now, after the culture stuff, I start getting hungry. So let's talk about food and restaurants. And
my favorite. DC is often rated as one of the top five food cities in the United States. Our food critic, Tom Sitsima, actually traveled around to different cities, including Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, you get the idea, and ranked us objectively based on his travels. And he said, honestly, I would have to say that we're up there with Philly and New York now. Just about any kind of food that you want, we have. Our specialty in particular is ethnic food, and in particular, we do really well in some of the Asian types of food. We have a very large Korean community here, which means that you've got great Korean barbecue. We have some outstanding Italian restaurants. We do have some very interesting Vietnamese places, but they tend to be a little bit more casual. We have a number of Mediterranean and Middle Eastern restaurants. There's a place I haven't tried yet, but I intend to go to. It's called Joon, J-O-O-N, in Tyson's Corner, because we have a large Persian population here. that is a white tablecloth Persian place, not just kebabs. So we have a lot of diversity in so far as places to go. I believe we even have a Swahili restaurant that's run by a former ambassador. Yeah, so you name the kind of food that you want, and chances are we have it. Eastern European is the only thing that I can think of that we might not have a lot of. But a lot of Mediterranean places, we've got from ethnic food, hole in the wall, to white tablecloth, you name it. We've got casual French, we've got dressy French, we've got American continental. You know, you can't throw out a name of a kind of food and me not be able to come up with an answer for you insofar as what we have here.
Okay. Can you find some of these restaurants in the outer areas of the DMV?
Absolutely. The Korean restaurants are actually best in Virginia.
Okay.
The Chinese restaurants are actually best in Maryland. Depending upon where the communities kind of went to. DC by far is the best place for Ethiopian food, as opposed to any place outside of DC. Yeah. I would say the Persian food is definitely best in Virginia, where the largest Persian community is. So yeah, you can absolutely find food. Now, if you get far enough out of DC, of course, no, you're going to wind up with, I'm sorry, Bob Evans.
Right.
If you like that. But as long as you're in the DC metro area, yes, you will find all of this kind of food.
Sounds so good. Ethiopian, I don't think I've ever had. What kind of food is Ethiopian food?
What's fascinating. They eat with their hands, and they eat with a pancake called injera. And so the injera is to pancakes what sourdough is to sourdough bread. So these are slightly stretchy pancakes that they put on the bottom of a large tray. And then most of the food that they make resembles stew, quite frankly. And so you've got steak tidbits. You've got chicken, which usually they combine a hard-boiled egg with chicken in sort of a yellow curry sauce. They do a lot of lentils. They do a lot of beans, that kind of a thing. And you just take a little bit of the injera pancake, rip it off, and pick up a little bit of whatever it is that you are interested in eating and pop it in your mouth.
Sounds enticing. Sounds really good. Yeah, I'm coming from New York, you know, New York has pretty much everything.
New York City's got everything. It's very familiar to the New York, very similar to the New York dining scene, but New York City has better Eastern European restaurants like Polish food, for example, which I like.
And I was spoiled.
Or Hungarian.
I was spoiled living and growing up in New York and then moving, you know, out to Florida. It's not the same as far as food is
concerned. It is not. No.
No.
St. Pete is, the dining scene in St. Pete is improving, but it's not
DC. It's still not.
No.
What? Yeah.
No, it's almost impossible to find decent dim sum in St. Pete.
Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about. Okay. So where you are, do you have to get in your car, or are there any restaurants around that you can kind of walk to? Or
we have one place that we can walk to, which is a Portuguese restaurant, and thankfully that's quite good. I understand that there are a number of places that are also going to open up. It's in a development that's still being built about 5-minute walk from here. The Ritz-Carlton is building apartments over there. We've got another sort of Greek/Italian place that I could walk to, but by and large, and this was true of the place we lived in previously in the district, we do have to get in the car, but it's a 5-minute drive, literally a 5-minute drive. So that's not a big deal. Some of the ethnic places that I mentioned, though, 15 minutes because of traffic, 25 minutes because of traffic. If you want to go out to eat, for example, in some of the other, like Brookline or Ivy or some of these they were up and coming neighborhoods, but now they're here. That's definitely an Uber. Without question, you hop in an Uber. You just don't want to deal with traffic and parking.
Right. I hear you. Very cool. So you told us a little bit about public transportation. So they have the trains, more the metro system is in the DC area, and they have some sort of, I'm assuming, trains that come out to all the other states, Maryland, Virginia as well. And then I'm sure they have a bus system too.
We have an extensive bus system. Washington phased out trolleys, unfortunately, in the late 1960s, I believe. That's a whole story unto itself. What has happened is that, yes, the metro does extend out of DC into both Virginia and Maryland. There is going to be the Purple Line, which is the one that's 5-minute walk from our place. That is going to be the only subway line in the area that's actually strictly limited to one state, which is Maryland. And essentially what it's doing is it is connecting the ends of various lines. So if you envision Washington as having the greatest concentration, Washington proper, this diamond-shaped physical area, as having the bulk of the subway lines, and then they radiate out from there. The Purple Line is connecting a few of the different extraneous arms of those subways that go out into the suburbs, so that you can actually get from Silver Spring, which is over in the east, all the way over to Bethesda, which is in the west. So that connectivity between the spokes of the wheel just aren't here in DC. And so the Purple Line will connect some of the spokes. The other thing that they've done is when they went about building out the subway lines, and the Silver Line is actually the most recent fully functioning subway line, and that goes out to Dulles Airport now. And that is, the Silver Line goes from DC into Virginia to Dulles Airport. What they did is they said, okay, we're going to increase the density where we have these subway stops so that people can start building high-rise buildings. As a result, there is an area called Tyson's Corner. Tyson's Corner is a name that people hear a lot. It is actually unincorporated, and it resides in the county of Fairfax. We're bizarre here. We had a county, or actually there are several counties like this, that had a population explosion, but nothing was ever incorporated. There is no city of Fairfax. Fairfax is a county. Within the county of Fairfax, you have an area called Tyson's Corner. Tyson's Corner has decided that it is all that, and it is now billing itself as America's next great city. And when the subway line went through there, and it's all the way through Tyson's Corner already, they immediately told everybody that wanted to build there, you can now build high rises with high density. So they went about flattening the car dealerships. There's no love lost. The buildings they ripped down were not pretty. And there's literally a city now springing up in Tyson's Corner. We're talking 30-story buildings, wow. Lots and lots of 30-story buildings. Wow. So if anybody cares to look that up on a map and you want to live outside of D.C., the newer buildings are going to be expensive. Let me just warn you. But Tyson's Corner is going to have every single amenity that a normal city would. They already have a performing arts center that Randy Rainbow recently appeared at.
Wow.
Right. So it's called an edge city, and they are building a city out there.
How far is Tyson's Corner from D.C.?
7 miles, I think, 5 to 7 miles. It's edge city. It's literally, we've got a bunch of single family homes that stretch for about 10 miles in the new city again.
Awesome.
I mean, just like Atlanta has Buckhead in downtown Atlanta, among other areas, we're sort of the same situation. Mm-hmm. Tyson's Corner would be our Buckhead.
Right. So if I lived in D.C., would I be able to find a neighborhood where I can walk to mostly everything, walk to the metro, walk to restaurants, walk to...
The DuPont Circle neighborhood in particular is that. Capitol Hill can be that. Yes, there are absolutely places that you can go to in D.C. and say, all right, can I get by with walking or can I get by without a car? Absolutely. They do tend to be a little bit more expensive, but you can find that. You can also find that, though, in Arlington County, the first stretch of the Orange Line subway in Virginia, when it leaves Washington, D.C. proper, it goes under the river and it pops up in Virginia in a place called Arlington, Virginia, where, by the way, Nestle Corporation now has its North American headquarters, talking about companies moving into the D.C. area. The moment it comes up from out under the river, for the next, I believe it's 6 stops, it is extremely high density. High rises, garden high rises, business buildings, doctors' offices, that kind of a thing. So it is a miniature city, another edge city area. It is perfectly possible to live there minus an automobile. Or if you do have a car, leave it parked at the condo garage and walk down the street to go to dinner or the Trader Joe's or the Harris Teeter or whatever. So yes, we have numerous places. Bethesda is the same way. If you live in a condo in Bethesda, why would you drive to the supermarket? Just walk. So yes, we have, just like New York City, we have a number of walkable neighborhoods here.
That's my type of place. I'm not a great fan of driving. New York, I never really drove much at all. And when I moved to Florida, I had no choice.
Did you live in Manhattan?
I lived in Brooklyn.
Ah, okay. I was going to say, you had a car in Manhattan?
No.
Yeah, that would be something.
Yeah, no. So I'm pretty used to walking and commuting and taking the subways and the commuter rails and stuff like that. And I prefer that. Again, when I moved to Florida, I had no choice to go to work. I had a car, so I drove back and forth to work. Here in Phoenix, you do need a car as well because it's more spread out, even though I'm in the middle of Midtown Phoenix. You still need a car to get around. We have light rail and stuff like that, and I can walk to restaurants across the street, down the block, but you don't want to even do that in 120 degrees. So
I completely get that.
Yeah. So very good.
I can walk to the Amazon Fresh from here, but they need to sort of up their game.
Yeah.
Half the shelves are empty.
Oh, wow.
I think they're waiting for the developments to fill up before they fully stock the store.
Gotcha. Tell us about crime in the area. I'm sure crime is going to differ in different areas, in different states and districts. Tell us a little bit about
that. That's correct. Keeping in mind, again, I've lived here for 30 years, and at one point we were the murder capital of the United States. It has gotten a lot better. As of lately, I would say over the past year or so, we've seen a little bit of a flare up in terms of the crime rate / murder rates. We do have carjackings here. People do need to be careful. But by and large, it's not any less safe than any of the other major American cities that anyone would choose to live in. We don't typically have the smash and grab robberies that people see on TV in places like Portland or San Francisco. We do lock up our stuff, though, just like so many other communities. You know, you go into Target, yes, the laundry detergent is behind plexiglass. You have to be aware of your surroundings, but crime also tends to be most prevalent in certain areas. And so, you know, for example, Chevy Chase is not a high crime area. You just sort of have to maintain your wits about you. It used to be that there were, even in the bad old days, there wasn't crime in Metro. There is crime now in Metro. So you do, when you're in Metro, have to sort of keep your wits about you. Mm-hmm. But we're no worse than any other major American city. And we might actually be, depending upon where you are, safer than a lot of other American cities.
Yeah, you have to have your guard up wherever you are, especially these days. There are, I don't know, some crazy people out there. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay. So DC itself is going to be a little bit more high crime than the outside areas.
Yeah. DC proper has areas with higher crime. Yes.
Yeah.
But again, too, we have carjackings that occur in Virginia. We have carjackings that occur in Maryland. You just have to be careful.
Yeah. We have them here in Phoenix too. Okay. So if I lived where you live, would I be comfortable? I feel comfortable if I had to take my doggy out at 2 a.m. for a little walk?
Absolutely.
Okay. Are you in like a gated community area or?
No, we're just in a 7-story high-rise building. There are actually 3 separate buildings joined by a sort of walkway, if you will, that's completely enclosed. It's just sort of a very, you know, brick with mansard roofs. That's what it looks like. And it's on a major street in Chevy Chase. Where we lived previously was a very large single family home. Even though it was within the confines of Washington, D.C. proper, it looked like small town USA. There were crimes of opportunity, even in that situation. We had stuff stolen out of, we didn't have stuff personally stolen. But on our neighborhood listserv, there were plenty of reports of people who became cavalier and left their cars unlocked and had their cars rifled through and mm-hmm. stuff stolen. So, of course, we had to be careful. They're always warning people to keep your doors locked because people would sort of walk around. They would show up in electric company hazmat yellow vests saying that they needed to check something. Well, of course, the first thing you do is call 911. So, yeah, there's even in the areas that are single family homes, where the average price is $2 million for a home, you've got to be vigilant. This is not right. The middle of nowhere America where nobody locks their cars or their doors.
Right. Totally. I totally get that. Do you have a big homeless population?
We do have a homeless population, yes. They tend to congregate in certain areas. What I would say is our population is by no means anything comparable to some of the other cities you see on the nightly news.
Gotcha. Kitty's hungry.
Indeed, yes, she is. Yeah, and it's not even dinner time yet.
Tell us a little bit about healthcare, Jim. What's it like? Are you able? What's the distance to the closest hospital to you? Are there hospitals all over the area? Tell us a little bit about that and the quality of care.
As a person with quite a few medical issues, I'm probably a little bit more up on hospitals than a lot of other people would be. We tend to have, in the district proper, we have two level one trauma centers, one being Washington Hospital Center, the second being George Washington University Hospital Center, which is where they brought Reagan after he was shot. We also have Inova Fairfax, which is a level one trauma center, which is out in Fairfax County. We have a number of level two trauma centers, including Alexandria Hospital. And then we have a number of other hospitals that are considered to be very solid hospitals with specialties. Sibley is considered to be my neighborhood hospital, if you will. That's the place where I would go for minor surgeries. I wouldn't go there for anything life-threatening, but I would certainly go there for routine surgeries. We have a broad range of doctors here. I have only had to go outside of the DMV area once to Johns Hopkins for certain medical issues. By and large, they can handle any medical situation that you have. The one thing that we did find, interestingly enough, and this impacted my partner, is the best eye, we have eye doctors, but this we're not known as an eye center, if you will. Certainly, I understand Houston, Philly, and Boston have better eye medical professionals than we do. But aside from that, from a medical standpoint, you're going to find just about any type of medical care you need. Hospitals, some are better than others, but that's true of anywhere. Mm-hmm. You have to be diligent about looking for the right doctors, the right practices, that kind of a thing. But if you're careful and you find the right doctors, then by all means. I love my doctors, and it was actually, when we were talking about retiring to Florida, I was prepared to come back up to D.C. for my medical care.
So how close is the nearest hospital?
We just moved. So I would say right off the top of my head, it's going to be the hospital that I used to go to. Sibley Hospital used to be a mile from my house. I literally, long story short, I literally wound up walking there for surgery.
Wow.
That car, the only car that we had available at that moment in time at 5 o'clock in the morning had a flat tire. And so I decided to walk for my surgery. So that was a mile from the house. But again, not where you go if you're facing a life-threatening emergency.
Right.
Suburban is probably at this moment in time a little bit closer, and I'd say maybe 5 miles away. But I would urge anybody, regardless of where they are currently living, to have a conversation with their family. And if you are experiencing a life-ending emergency, you need to sit down and make a list of which hospitals you want to be transported to, which is, without going into it, I was in that situation. I was facing a life-ending situation.
Wow.
And because of that, and because of the conversation I had with my partner, they couldn't get me to Washington Hospital Center in time. I told you that was a level one. He chose GW Hospital as the second, and that was the other level one hospital, and that's the reason I'm alive.
Wow. That's so important. Do
that and make sure you know where you're headed.
I'm glad you're alive too.
Thanks. If you're having a life-ending emergency, the ambulance people should be asking you where you want the victim to be transported to. This is not a hernia.
Right, exactly. Do you experience long waits for doctors or elective surgeries?
No, because I pay for a VIP boutique doctor, number one.
Oh.
I do, and it is important that I do that. I can reach my doctor 24/7 by cell phone, his personal cell phone. And I go to Sibley Hospital for minor surgery. It is in Washington, D.C., across the river, and this is the truth. Anybody can check this out. It's across the river from where the Saudi family has a huge compound. The Saudi family very generously donates to Sibley Hospital to make it its primary medical place that they go to. So it is a small, extraordinarily well-staffed, extraordinarily clean, extraordinarily well-run hospital, which is why if you're having minor surgery, everybody goes there.
Goes there.
Right. But I did break my ankle a year ago, and my partner drove me to the ER, and they told me it was going to be a five-hour wait. This was like on a Tuesday evening. So I went home and called my doctor on my cell phone.
5 hours, not too bad for trauma surgery.
It wasn't a trauma. I had to have surgery on it, but this at the moment, it was just a broken leg. We didn't know I had to have surgery at that point. It was going to be 5 hours just to be seen for a broken leg.
I could relate. So my husband broke his knee, was rushed to the ER, and we were in a room in the ER for, I would say, a little over 24 hours. So they didn't, you know, until he was able to be admitted into surgery, emergency surgery. And that was a mess. And it took so long. And they asked us, do you want to go home to wait? And then we'll see if we can get you a bed. Well, like, go home. How do we even get home? You know, how do we get back? No, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, it really depends. You have to know which hospital to go to, quite frankly. Yep. There were hospitals where, yes, you can sit and wait for 24 hours. Even Inova Fairfax, which is widely considered to be the best hospital in the entire DMV area. They brought my grandmother there, and she was, thankfully, it was her own private room in the ER, but she was in the ER waiting for a room for about 28 hours. She had a private cubicle / room in the ER, so it wasn't the end of the world.
Right. So do you have, or do you wish that you had something in Chevy Chase or where you live now that, you know, you had before? Do you miss anything?
As in when I lived in a single family home?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Storage space.
Okay. Anything around you that's any different that you miss? Like, I know from New York, I miss bagels, New York bagels.
Well, you have to keep in mind that I essentially moved 3 miles from my previous residence.
Okay.
So there's not much. Right. Exactly. So there's not really anything that I'm missing. No, it didn't. I had a slightly shorter commute on those days when I have to drive to the office. It was shorter at the other place than here, but no, I mean, otherwise it's about the same.
It's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Okay. And what would you say would be the cons? Are there any cons of living there than anywhere else that you've lived?
The traffic, my partner's ride into work has substantially increased, unfortunately. It is a little bit more in the heat of traffic in this location. We overlook a major avenue, which definitely is a bit louder than we traded one form of noise for the other. We were previously in the flight path for National Airport, and we were so close in terms of the flight path that we could stand on the back deck and read what are called the N numbers, the serial numbers on the backs of the aircraft tails as they went overhead. That's not the case where we live now, but we get a lot of residual noise from cars speeding up Connecticut Avenue.
Okay. So in wrapping up, Jim, what would you say to our audience if they're thinking about moving to the National Capital Region?
I would say that if you're an urban person, a city person, and your shortlist requires culture, a diversity of food, good international travel connections, if you're a sports fan, if you enjoy having a very highly educated population, because I think that we have one of the highest numbers of people here with master's degrees and law degrees. I mean, one out of every 12 is a lawyer, and that could be good or bad depending, versus like one out of every 260. You know, those are all things to take into consideration. Plus two, we are not far. We're on the water, meaning two rivers in the area. We're very close to the Blue Ridge Mountains, not the biggest part of the Blue Ridge, but mountains nonetheless, and that whole scene there. We're also not far from the beach. Rehoboth and those beaches out on the Delmarva Peninsula are close by. You can also go to Cambridge, Maryland, which is an inlet of the Chesapeake Bay. So we do have a lot insofar as all of those amenities, if that's what you're looking for in retirement. That also comes with a price, though. So you have to sort of do the math, find out if you can find a financially viable way of living in the area. But if you're into cities, I would say this is a great choice.
And that I am. I'm the urban type of guy, so that sounds like a perfect area for me. Yeah, and thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today and being a part of this and letting us know all about the National Capital Region and the Washington, D.C. DMV area. So thank you, Jim. I really appreciate it, and we'll speak to you soon, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.